Speak of baby rainbow unicorns.
We're live. Speed Golf Baby, let's go. You are listening to Rainbow Unicorns with Luke Willett.
Hey.
And me, Adam Lorton.
Right, Adam, I need to know something. I thought you were injured, but I see that you've entered a speed golf tournament, you legend.
Legend, reckless. These words, they're basically the same in my vocabulary. Now, here's what happened, Luke. A month ago, we talked, and you told me, hey, Adam, get serious about your physical therapy and just see what happens in a month. Guess what? I got more serious about my physical therapy. I'm feeling better. What I figured out is that if I run only on grass, I feel great the next day. So I've been running only on grass. I've been swinging a golf club a lot. I played a practice round at this golf course when I was on vacation, and I found that I could run 5 miles, and I was fine. So the hard part of this is going to be that the golf courses around me are still not open, so my practice opportunities will be limited. My fitness is still limited compared to where I was 6 months or a year ago, and I think there's nothing like just getting on the horse even when you're not 100% ready. I'm still going to be 90% ready for this, Luke. So yeah, I'm pumped. Also, this will be my first time playing with the Speed Score app on the Garmin watch. I'm going to be playing it in the tournament, so my hole-by-hole times and scores will be straight on Speed Score, and I love that as an innovation. We'll get into that. But yeah, Indiana Speed Golf Open, April 25th. Probably the biggest event in April. I'm not forgetting anything. Wait. Actually, no. I'm told now that the New Zealand Speed Golf Open is this coming weekend, April 18, 19. There might be a couple of big competitors in that event.
Nah, just a couple.
Just a couple.
Mate, absolutely. Yeah, it's the Kickstarter month, I would say. You know, we're going to get a feel of a few things. And to be fair, we've already had a feel of a few things. Let's be quite clear on that.
You weren't feeling it when the world record got broken.
I was absolutely feeling it. It's amazing. And I hung out with Luke Bone this morning, and we got talking, and, you know, as you're running around, you're chatting to your buddy, and we talked about the world record just briefly. And, you know, we basically very, very quickly got to the point where it was, because Luke said, you know, I wonder if it was a short course. And I said, mate, honestly, I can't shoot that on a short course. So never mind. The point is, whatever golf course you're playing it on, it's a world record, and that's so cool. So I will always stand up and bang a drum for any amazing performance. And let's face it, amazing performance could be a first timer going out and playing speed golf. You know, I think we need people in our corner, because you know how it is, first tee nerves and all, it's easy to get in our own way.
Absolutely. I thought of a story that I'm not going to tell live on the podcast, but anyway, we have an amazing episode for you guys today. Three things on my agenda. Number one, what makes the ultimate speed golfer? A lot of people are thinking about their training progression as we head into the summer months here in the Northern Hemisphere, the correct hemisphere. Is speed golf too expensive? We're going to be having some perspectives. We might even have a guest on for that. And then finally, the Speed Score watch fleet has been announced, and it's coming to a tournament near you. Well, near me anyway. Anyway, we'll talk about the Speed Score watch fleet, but let's get right into it with life updates. All right, I'm preparing for the Indiana Speed Golf Open coming up in only 8 days. What's on your radar, Luke?
Yeah, that's pretty cool, mate. I don't know if I can top that in a speed golf sense, but I can certainly do my thing in terms of my world, which is I had a lab test. I had a couple of days ago, and my previous one was 4 months ago. So a lot's happened since then. Obviously, we had a bit of a cold winter, like you guys, rainy and all that sort of stuff. But I kept my head down,
so
trained hard.
What are you looking for in a lab test? We're talking about a blood draw, right?
No. So, yeah, it's funny. We talked about this before. I sent you a message, and then you said about, you know, I'm looking forward to finding out about the bloods. And I was like, oh, yeah, getting a all serious about Dracula and stuff. Actually, I was just pulling you, man. And yeah, no, it's a physiology test. So it's submaximal. It helps me understand my heart rate zones. It helps me understand my VO2 max, which is really the key things that I'm constantly looking at when I'm training. So I'm constantly looking. You just showed us a Garmin watch. I'm constantly looking at nothing to do with score or time even, really. It's about heart rate zones and effort that I'm putting in.
Okay, wait. So I was picturing something, you know, of course a needle poke is a little bit uncomfortable, but you did something significantly more uncomfortable than I was picturing, which is you got on a treadmill with the oxygen rebreather and you did a VO2 max test.
And there were lots of needles as well, funny enough. But okay.
So what'd you learn from this?
Well, just really, really quickly, a real snapshot of this. Submax is when you find out your heart rate zone. So you have a heart rate monitor on every 3 minutes. You have a lactate test. So then you're finding out just, you know, where are you in this times of effort? You know, are you starting to increase the blood lactate level or not? And obviously what happens is you go for quite a period and it's kind of a very, very flat line. And then all of a sudden it just goes up. And you need to catch it roughly about 2.5 decimals, and if you catch it at that point, that's where in theory you can train at high intensity, but it's not going to do any damage. You can recover quite quickly, and this is where we get into threshold training. So that's handy,
right? Well, and so can we back up for a second? So my understanding of this is that if you look at a progression from basically, you know, walking to running as fast as you can, if you look at the lactate curve, it looks kind of like an S curve. That is, it's low and then it jumps up and then it plateaus because there's only so much lactate your body can produce. And you're
not entirely
okay,
because if you're supremely fit, your lactate will go through the roof. You can get some crazy high numbers. If you're very, very tired, so here's an interesting one for you. A lot of people see lactate as threshold training. So it's this kind of high intensity, but not so high that you need 2 weeks to recover. Mm-hmm. But actually, you can use your lactate level in your big high track sessions, because if the lactate level, if your RPE, so your relative
rate of perceived exertion, I believe
that's the one. Yeah, then basically, and your number is lower than normal, then you're not recovered. So that's one thing that you can do. And then, of course, you know, I do check my lactate once a week when I'm on the track. So then I'm checking against these things, the number that came up yesterday. The good news is my lactate came in later. So that means my body is capable of taking a lot more speed and workload and effort. So, you know, I can run faster now for less effort, ultimately.
Huge. I mean,
it is huge, because it's not as simple as what I just said there. It's actually a big leap we've taken forwards. So in the last 4 months, my threshold was 4 minute Ks, which I thought was very slow, actually. It was interesting because I was at that point, I was doing low. I think I was pretty much 16 minute 5K. So then now my threshold has gone down to 3:45. So 3:45 minutes. So yeah, 3 minutes, 45 seconds for every K would be a threshold session. And that's a pretty marked improvement. So yeah, we're going for some pretty crazy numbers. I've got a race coming up next weekend. So we'll be both competing, just in slightly different ways.
Heck yeah. Oh, speaking of competing, I don't want to take the focus off you, except I do want to talk about me for a quick second, which is this golf course. I've previewed it, and Luke, have you ever played a golf course that just kind of doesn't fit your eye, where like there are a lot of shots you find intimidating or just not intuitive to your golf game? And if so, how do you think about preparing for a course like that?
That's a really good question, in the sense that I don't have that, actually. If it is slightly demanding off the eye, off the tee, I just hit it lower. I just try and hit it as low as I physically can, to the point where I'm practically topping it. I find that doesn't go offline, and it goes maybe 200 yards, if not more. And, you know, on a 6,000 yard layout or less, that's easy, you know. So that's my strategy. And also my strategy is that the one thing I love about speed golf is it's the ultimate version of just trusting yourself. You know, we play quick because we believe in ourselves. There's no procrastination. And if you are procrastinating, chances are someone else is. So What's all the bother? Let's get on with it.
All right. So the prescription from Luke is just don't worry about it and hit it low. Now, I will say, I think that's going to work better across the pond where the courses are a little firmer. This one is going to be wet and sticky. So I think if I hit it too low, I might just be taking 3 shots into every hole.
If you're not, I mean, because the thing is, if it's sticky and it's long, crappy grass and you hit it offline, you're going to be looking for however long in the rough, you're going to be losing balls. It just becomes a complete disaster. So, you know, I would rather take 3 to get to the green instead of 2 if I know I'm always running onto a ball that I can see from 100 yards away.
You know, that's a fair point. And I've told this story many times, but I learned a valuable lesson from Rob Hogan, which is he said, expectations, as in, why do you have so many expectations about your golf game? Your golf game is not 100% within your control. And actually, it's a benefit to me that I know my golf game is not there yet. Golf courses aren't even open around me. So my priority is going to be taking my Hogan holster, going fast, and trying to trust myself.
Yeah, I mean, look, is anyone ever qualified for the job that they do when they first get the job? No. And golf is no different. So I think it's really important that, you know, there's a life lesson there that we've all learned millions of times over. And we all survive to tell the tale. So speak up and trust me is child's play when it comes to that sort of stuff.
Well, fantastic. And I think this is going to be my dad, of course, has watched me on video many times, but he's actually never been able to attend a tournament live. But my dad is going to ride along with me for this tournament. So that's going to be special in and of itself.
That's the magic right there. Sharing it with your dad, your kids, your wife, anyone. It's lovely when you're with the inner circle out there. That's actually no better feeling.
Absolutely. Is it time to get to the main event, Luke?
Which one are we talking about? The ultimate or the...
I want to talk about the ultimate speed golfer.
All right, let's go for it.
I think you and I both have pretty strong opinions about this, and I would not be surprised at all if we have some clashing opinions here. So let me set the table by saying, on the surface, what makes the ultimate speed golfer is pretty obvious. There are 3 elements. Your speed golf score is your run time plus your golf time plus your golf score. So you minimize each of those 3 elements, you have the ultimate speed golfer. But there are a lot of details to how you manage that. So is there a place you want to start? Running speed, golf score? Is there a place you want to start here?
Well, as with all things, with how we both roll, I get into the feel of things and, you know, mine's probably a bit more subjective, whereas you have some cold, hard facts and numbers. I just love everything I do, whether it's teaching people how to play golf or performance. I find the information, the academic stuff, but then I test it real time. And then what I talk about is what I've tested. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, cause I remember when I was studying and then I was like seeing, I remember I saw a sports psychologist and it was a really good at what he does. Looks after tour players, charges like £1,200 for a few sessions. It's ridiculous. And in the end I was like, actually, what this guy, he knows his stuff. He's read a lot of books, but has he tested this? Has he been in the field? And yes, being in the field and testing it takes far longer and it takes, you know, it takes time and effort and actually it could be a lot of dead ends. But we've all heard the Michael Jordan, saying where he is the guy who missed the most shots.
Yes.
Because he took the most shots. And there you go. I've let the cat out of the bag. It's outrageous. Can't believe I've done this. Ugh. So the ultimate speed golfer, for me, is the workhorse. It's the guy who I don't believes in a theory. It's the guy or girl who is willing to test and to fail the most, who is willing to absolutely hound every possible thing because they accept there is no theory that is the theory because the best has not yet been experienced. And that's I know it's very, again, that's very me, but that's what I have done. I've never had a year where I'd be like, yep, last year worked really well. So now I'm going to sit on this and do this again going forwards. And as a result, every year something has changed. And yeah, I've had some more successful years than others, but actually every year has been a success in its own right because of an exploration. I've grown as an individual. And some of those growth Gross will be like doing the high jump, you know, when they were just doing the scissor kick, and then all of a sudden, pop, you do the Busby flop and you go over it, and then all of a sudden the bar has to go up by an extra meter or two. So it's about having the bravery and the courage to explore the unexplored.
Okay, well, I love that frame, the Fosbury flop. And I'm curious, what have been some of the Fosbury flop moments in speed golf? I will say, for me, one of them is clearly Jamie Reed wedge putting at the 2022 World Championships. He put that technique on the map when a lot of people were still using putters, Luke Willett included. And he showed that wedge putting can be as high quality as putter putting if you're good at it.
Yeah, totally. So you got that one. Obviously, you got the Hogan Holster.
Hogan Holster,
which is having a little bit of a moment by the looks of it at the minute. People are popping about, yourself, Jamie, and others.
Yeah, go ahead and lump Jamie Reed and me in the same bucket. I love that.
We're a small group, mate. Which comes on to the next topic later.
Why don't you say Jim Davis?
Okay, Jim. Yeah, well, Jim, I love Jim because I remember there was a coach that I worked with for myself, and he showed me this thing and he goes, oh, look, do you want me to send you one? I was like, no. Can you just tell me all the different components so I can make it myself? And he goes, oh, why do you want to do that? And I was like, well, it's the making it that is the learning opportunity. You know, I was at that very moment, I was very much into, I need to do tough things to get stronger and better.
Yeah.
I still am, but I was well and truly down that route at that moment. So I was like knocking all my neighbors' doors, and I was trying to find out who has an angle grinder, who has this, who has this. Anyway, eventually I made this thing, and some of you guys have seen it, the hockey ball at the end of my golf club. I called it the thing, and it's really hard because you hit the club head is the hockey ball. Anyway, the point is, rewind back to Jim. He made his Hogan holster. You know, he found a belt, and obviously he clipped it all together. I know other people have done similar, but I really do like that. I think that is just, that is, you know, being adaptable, that is the resilience and determination to figure things out. Whether it's been done before or not, it doesn't matter. He's an innovator, disruptor, and that in the end is what a speed golfer is.
Amen. Okay. Well, I appreciate where you're coming from with the F around and find out mentality, which, by the way, I fully buy into. But I will say, I think that collecting a little bit of data can give you some clues about where there might be wasted time, especially wasted time in your game. So first of all, let's talk about how do you get faster as a runner. All right, so to me, there are a few factors here. Aerobic development, that'd be lots of easy running or easy biking. Neuromuscular development, how do you deal with speed? Can you run as fast, you know, at a higher effort as you need to? Are you comfortable with discomfort? Now, this is something you excel at, Luke Willett, which is you will lay it all out on the line. You know, if there's a person who could run faster, but it would deteriorate their golf game, then maybe comfort with discomfort might be something that they could work on to run faster at the same golf score. Weight, and I'm not talking about how heavy your body is, I'm talking about how much equipment you're carrying. The difference between 3 clubs, 9 balls, a flask of water, I mean, all that stuff can weigh you down and make you run slower. Fueling, do you have enough carbs on board? Heat management, huge for me. Some people are more sensitive to heat and others are less sensitive to heat. For me, I've found that if I do some pre-cooling for the round, I get faster. Hydration. How do you manage your energy throughout the round? Are you going out too fast and fading at the end? And then if you're playing in a 2-day event, how are you recovering in between rounds to make sure you can run as fast on day 2 as you did on day 1?
And recovery, of course.
Yep.
Which, you know, falls into a lot of those things. And I'm starting to realize when it comes to speed, recovery is the most important weapon that we all have.
What does your recovery stack look like, Luke?
Well, yeah, fueling. I fuel as much as I physically can before.
Lots of training. Carbs before, lots of carbs after, yeah?
Yeah, so obviously it's if you're a cyclist, it's easier because you don't have the jostling around your tummy. Mm-hmm. That is a tricky one. But you can fuel quite severely before, even actually quite up until the point where you almost just set off, if you take the right sources on board. I'll ultimately strip out fiber. That's the main one. So apples are not probably ideal. Bananas are quite good. White bread is good. You know, the things that a lot of people say are healthy are actually really not great when it comes to training. So like wholemeal bread, seeded bread. Yeah. Anything with fiber is a bit of a disaster, actually.
Yeah,
you have this sloshing feeling.
I love that stuff, but yeah, the times I've had tummy troubles is when I've eaten a big peanut butter and jelly sandwich with all the seeds and whole grains and stuff like that. Yeah. Those are the times when I've been feeling the worst.
You got to watch out for it. And actually, the interesting thing is, one thing I've learned is when I've done a really high intensity effort, and this obviously comes back, it's not just fueling, it's the recovery, because then you can recover after, is the fiber the day and 2 days before. Rice is a great carbohydrate source, I've learned. White bagels are really, really good, which I know obviously it's a good staple for you guys in the US. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, I remember I've been so long in my life has been about avoiding ultra processed flour and all that sort of stuff, but actually I have to say, when it comes to training, because you're using so much fuel, it's okay. You're going to get through it so quick. You need it, and you need it on board. And yeah, if you can have a source which you can refuel as you go, then that is huge. And I do that with either gels, or I have a drink mix that I use, but I'm not going to say what they are. I think it's important people figure it out themselves. But there are, if you just do a little bit of research, you'll figure it out. But the most important thing, which I have gone through when it comes to my stack, as you put it, it's through experimentation. Yeah, it's taken like 9 months to get to one thing, 12 months to get to another thing, more months, 18 months. Ironically, I don't use electrolytes anymore. Interesting. I'm quite happy with a bit of rock salt and just salt in my food. You know, so I have a well-balanced diet. I believe a good diet will do nearly all of it. The only thing I can't do in my diet is have enough protein or carbohydrate. They're easy things to add. Protein powder, I can have 2 scoops of that a day extra. Carbohydrate, you can find some really, really good carbohydrate sources which have zero fiber that tick all the boxes. So that's what I've done.
Oh yeah, and the other thing we haven't mentioned, but I think you and I both believe in, one of the most potent legal performance enhancers for running speed, caffeine.
Yeah, caffeine's good. It's really, really good. And I'm always exploring. You know, I remember we started out this podcast journey and I talked about, you know, espresso is not, it didn't really work for me, and I've sort of gone back into it, taken lots more fiber out. There is something to be said about consuming something that you enjoy as well, that you look forward to. Obviously, it's a little bit of a placebo effect, and I think that's important that we don't underestimate that. It's a good thing. It's a weapon. Heck, it's yes. A performance enhancer. Caffeine, you know, what I did this morning, I wake up at 4:30 to play for speed golf. So obviously you have a cortisol boost about 30 minutes, I believe, after you wake up. And if you have caffeine in that period, you have like a mega spike, which then makes you feel like a zombie. I've definitely had this. I'm sure most speed golfers have had this because of just the way we operate around mid morning or midday. I just feel literally like I'm useless for the rest of the day. So what I found does the trick. So what I did is I woke up, I had for half an hour where I had some food, a little bit of overnight soaked oats, and sliced up some bananas in it. I still made my espresso, but I put it in a takeaway flask. And as I drove to the golf course, which is quite a long way away, Luke's course, it's about 50 minutes away. Halfway there, I was sort of over that sort of 70 minute moment when I'd woken up. So I consumed it then, just before I got to the tee. Now, from a performance point of view, ideally you want to be really about an hour before performance. But, you know, the way I see it is, that gave me a lovely little boost mid-round, because I do find those early starts hard. Like Luke would tell you, when I have these really early starts, I just barely struggle to hit the golf ball at the start. It's hilarious. So anything to help. But yeah, again, I've found that journey, and that some people, it's 90 minutes after waking you should take your caffeine. Some people, you might be able to get away with it a little bit earlier, but you need to try, you know, and you need to be willing to feel like shit for a little bit and maybe try it a bit differently the next day.
Amen.
You know, but one thing I've learned is, though, you know, if you're going to play around caffeine or any of this sort of stuff, it's not just the caffeine that you need to be mindful of. You need to be mindful of, like I said, I had a bit of an issue actually in the end, it wasn't the caffeine that was causing me problems. It was the fiber. And I thought I had stripped out fiber, but it turned out I was having whole grain bread still. And just by taking that little bit of seedy sort of stuff out, it made a big difference to me.
Huge. Yeah, I'll typically have a cup of coffee, you know, pretty soon after waking, and then I'll try to have a caffeine gel 30 minutes before my tea time. Works for me, but like you said, experimentation is key. Now,
yeah, definitely.
Running faster is great, but it takes a long time and a lot of experimentation to figure out how to run faster in a round of speed golf.
Yeah, can I just say one thing about speed? Because I think I'm probably the best when it comes to this. It takes forever.
Yeah.
Are there any quick low-hanging fixes which is going to help you run faster? Honestly, don't get injured. And the next thing is no.
And fuel.
You just have to put the time
fueling, in. If you're not fueling before a round.
It's not going to really make you faster. It just means you can sustain for longer.
Okay.
I think when it comes to being faster, there's no cheat.
Sorry, when I say faster, I say the time on the clock is shorter when you finish your 18th hole. So I would say fueling does make you faster.
Maybe. I get that. But you know what I mean? Like just general leg speed.
Yeah.
You can't trade in 18, 24, 36 months worth of training. You know, and most people can probably just about figure that out. But can you do it whilst not getting a major injury in that whole period? Then you're getting down to small numbers. But if you can, my gosh, you're going to build a real engine. And I think that's the holy grail, you know, and that's where I think we need to remind people that, you know, you're listening to this podcast, you think you might be a bit more inspired to go out and train, get on the track, whatever. Just think long term. That's what I'm going to say. You know, Worlds is in November, you know, it's a few months away. You could even say, well, actually, I've got time. It's going to be actually 2028 that I'm going to really focus on. So I'm going to build a proper engine for there. I'm going to use this Worlds, if I can qualify, to give myself the best learning experience for that next one. You know, and I've definitely spoken to a few people where that is the case, and that's how they're approaching it. Even a few US players. So there you go, mate. They're all after it. Yeah.
Really, it's 2034 that I'm looking at, because that's exactly when I'm going to be 50 years old. I'll be in the senior division.
34?
Isn't that?
How old are you, mate?
I'm 40. I'll be 42 this Worlds.
Oh, good. So you'll be competing against me.
Yes, I will. Always. Yeah. Always.
Don't worry. I'm still aiming for sub-15 at that point.
Exactly.
Awesome.
All right. Okay. So, but I think the main event here is golf time. We will talk about how to lower your golf scores, because there are ways to be predictable at you know, avoiding big numbers in the golf game. But really, I think the main event here, the thing that you and I can contribute most significantly to this conversation, is how to get faster at the golf portion of speed golf, because that's where the seconds that add up into minutes really live, in my opinion. And, you know, it gets down to the little details. Like, all right, let's think about off the tee. First of all, do you use a tee? Now, to me, there's a calculation for this. Now, I mean, Luke, it's simple. You don't use a tee. You're an excellent ball striker already. But I think for a person who is maybe less advanced as a golfer, the tee calculation is not quite as straightforward. Because let's say it takes you on average 4 seconds to set up a tee. All right, that means 72 seconds of tee setup across an entire round. So that's, you're talking about just over 1 minute. Now, can you save one stroke across the entire round by teeing it up every time? I would say for most golfers, the answer is yes. So for most golfers, I would recommend hitting off a tee, even though it's slower.
But hang on, here's the rabbit in the hare. So you've just gone the hare route, in my opinion. But I would say the constraint of not using a tee, and if you do it for long enough, means you become a better ball striker. So what is it you want to be? Do you want to be long term? Are you focusing on the future, or are you focusing on the here and now? Because I know if someone ever comes to me, they're focused on the future. They're not focused on the here and now. So anyway, sorry, mate.
It's okay to disagree. I still recommend putting the ball on the tee for most speed golfers most of the time. Robin Smith, Luke Willett, you guys are welcome to hit it off the grass, and you have proven that you can handle that. But the other thing off the tee is, and really in every shot away from the green, how quickly can you get comfortable over the ball and execute the shot? Now, especially off the tee, some of this comes down to, have you planned your round in advance? Do you know the golf course? Do you know the correct line off this tee? Because if you already know the line, then it's a lot easier to prepare and hit your shot with confidence, knowing, hey, look, based on how far I hit this ball, I am least likely to end up in trouble if I take this as my aiming line.
All right, so let's get back into the coach mind.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, the world record score.
Go ahead.
Not that I shot that, but anyway, let's pretend I did. That involves flow state. You're doing too much thinking, Adam. Honestly, the one thing, like, there's a few drills that I do with people where I, like, just roll it into them. So I stand opposite the player, and then I roll the ball in, and then I tell them to hit it as it rolls towards them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've been shanking it or whatever they've been doing, they'll nail it, absolutely cream it. It might take them one or two shots, but then they just start, and they're like, oh man, this is the best feeling I've ever had. Can I play golf like this going forwards? If you really want to, why not? But, you know, I think I do agree that you need to have some reconnaissance. But, you know, if what really springs to mind is, like, I remember my best ever professional round of golf, just as a player, like, you know, just walking around a golf course. I remember it was a disaster. I'd never seen the golf course before. It was a marshland golf course. There's little reeds and lakes everywhere. And I arrived 20 seconds before my tee time, 10 seconds. They were counting me down. And it was, I couldn't even feel my arms. I remember somehow I managed to get the ball down the first fairway. It felt so stiff. And it took me about three or four holes just to get a bit of normality. Before I knew it, 18 holes was done, and I carded in a sight. It was like a 65 or something. And I was like, oh, okay, that was really interesting. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Had no preparation, no warm-up, no practice round, nothing. And I was like third on the leaderboard or something. I was doing really well, very hard golf course. So I hear you, but I do think, like, if you there is something to be said about the unspoken weapon flow state.
I agree.
And I know we're talking about speed in terms of scoring and everything else, but you might not be able to see someone thinking less, but as time moves on, I would say their results would tend to speak for themselves. You'll tend to overperform rather than underperform. I think when you have all the information that there is to man, you're probably going to underperform. And that mentally has a bit of a hit, especially during when you've got a lot of internal crazy dialogue going on, whether that's in a race or in a tournament.
I think I agree with you, but let me push back a little bit. So my point here is, if I have studied the course well, then that allows me less thinking on the tee box. If I don't know the course, then I feel like that's going to trigger more thinking in my brain, where I'm like, I don't know where is the safe spot to hit. But if I'm well prepared, then I say, that's the line, I'm going to hit the line.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, this is what I love about, you know, I talk about what I've experienced with other people and what I've experienced personally. And I use the analogy, it's like going down a water slide. You know, once you're committed, just woo-hoo, off you go. And I think for me, you're right, you know, it does help to have reconnaissance. It really does. But my reconnaissance is more, how long is the golf course? How many hills are involved? What's surrounding the greens? So I will always be very vague. I don't want to know what is there. I just want to be vague, because my form of golf is more about percentages.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm aiming for what I can see. Mm-hmm. I'm never aiming for what I can't see. If it's a tight looking hole and it looks horrible, then that's perfect for me. I don't actually want to know what it's at the end. It might be open, but that closes down my vision. It turns the, you know, the blinkers, the eye of the tiger on. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but there is an upside in stress. You know, if you're stressed, that is when we get stronger. So tell me, in life, yeah, just wandering around, how many things, the worse you treat them, the stronger they get? So look at your tires on your car. What happens if you drive it like on a shit road and like potholes and stuff? What happens? They break, right?
Sure.
And then what happens if you start like ragging your car engine? We're going to the car theme here anyway. Eventually it runs out, right? Now your fence that surrounds your property, you know, as time passes, you throw storms at it and it gets weathered. Now here's the interesting one. The human mind and the human body does the opposite, because it is the most incredible thing. We have evolved to survive predators, wars, droughts, this, that, everything, okay? Because our body when it goes in, when it moves into discomfort, it evolves, it gets stronger. Okay, so yeah, I'm 100%. I don't want it to be too easy, and I when it comes to when I'm talking to people about, you know, if they want to get stronger and better on the golf course, then I'm actively championing discomfort. And, you know, if you're feeling that, that's a performance enhancer. That is where you need to be right now. And if you're not feeling nervous, and if you're not feeling like this hole looks crazy, or if you're not feeling, actually, I'm a bit uneasy because I don't know this golf course, then it probably means you don't care. Okay, so you should feel these feelings. So I see it as a sharpener. I see it like caffeine. Mm-hmm. It focuses.
All right, but now you're getting into something interesting, which is, I mean, what I'm hearing a lot is the word flow state, and what I would equate that to is some people might call it the powerful, adaptive, unconscious brain, as opposed to like the conscious thinking brain, similar to what we were talking about a few months ago now, when I was reading The Inner Game of Tennis. And, you know, the whole point of The Inner Game of Tennis is getting out of your brain's way and letting your unconscious brain do the work that it's so good at. So I think this is a place that's ripe for individual experimentation, and not a one-size-fits-all approach where every golfer is saying, are you saying, you know, don't prepare for the course at all, or I say over-prepare for the course. The question is, what frees up your unconscious mind to do what it does best? Because when you can swing freely, you can play freely, and you can let the unconscious mind do its job.
Love it. Mate, actually, I'm not going to ask you what The Inner Game of Tennis was like, because we just don't have enough time. maybe next time.
Yeah, the main lesson from that book is the more you can get out of the way of thinking and just let your body do what it does naturally, the better you tend to play. And there are so many lessons there apply to golf. And people can nitpick that.
But isn't it amazing how, you know, I'm definitely going to let you heard it here first, guys.
Let's go.
I'm going to create this speed golf methodology for big, you know, golfers. No, I'm talking nonsense. But the point which I'm trying to make here is why, you know, I think it's just a matter of time where actually speed golf does disrupt the traditional approach to playing and learning golf, so much so that many of us, if not all of us, have seen the improvements to playing at a high tempo and what it does when I know if you to get all scientific, it's about your prefrontal area of your brain and all this sort of stuff. So it means that your decision making start part of your brain has been turned off. Brilliant. You know, this is fantastic. So anyway. Yeah. By the way, we're both agreeing with everyone. I think a little bit of preparation is great, and I think Adam probably absolutely agrees that.
Well, you know. But the point here is figure out what level of preparation lets you get out of your own way. And for me, that amount is more. For Luke, that amount is a little less. But it's all,
well, it's testing. Like you were saying, it's testing.
Individual experimentation here.
And it changes from year to year. Let's be quite clear on that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the point is the real secret sauce is get out and play as much speed golf as you can, which doesn't get you injured and doesn't cause issues.
All right. But there's a detail here. And Luke, I'm going to hate your answer to this, but I want to hear it anyway. Okay. Approach shots. I mean, approach shots. All right. If you took Tiger Woods in his prime and you made him tour average off the tee, tour average around the green, tour average putting, and you still gave him his excellence in approach shots, he would still have been the best golfer in the world. Approach shots are an incredibly important part of the golf game. And to me, an essential part of the approach shot is figuring out what they call effective playing distance. So what's your yardage? Mm. What are your adjustments for wind and lie and all the other conditions? Figuring out how hard to hit the darn golf ball. How do you think about figuring out how hard to hit the golf ball on an approach shot?
Yeah, so I'll just use my round this morning. I just need to know where the 150 stake is, that's all. And then I can figure out the rest. So it's just like, you know, if I'm a little bit under 150, I know I just need to just sort of softly hit that 6-iron in there. If it's 150, I just hit a normal 6. And then if it's, you know, 10, 20 yards over, I just hit it a little bit harder or smash it. It's amazing how simple golf can be. And, you know, I'm just, I don't know, I take dead aim. I don't even think about it. You know, I've talked about, you know, I've wrote a few posts recently, I think, where I sort of wrote about it being percentage goal for you aim centre of greens, but I don't even do that. I just aim straight at it. Because the way I see it is, I mean, I'm in a dark room and I'm just hitting a normal golf shot, like if I was hitting into a net. That's mm-hmm. how I feel. But I've been physically planted on a golf course. It's yeah.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of threads there. First of all, you know, one thing I'm hearing is that you, and I think of actually Rob Hogan as the poster child for this, have played so much golf, have hit so many of these shots, that when you see the 150 stake, there are a million calculations that go on in your head that are not in your conscious brain, but that you can feel, oh, okay, there's a breath of wind, this is in the rough. You don't need to calculate any of that. You can just hit the shot. For a golfer with less experience, maybe there are some calculations that would benefit them. But to your point, taking dead aim is not a terrible strategy, especially because the unconscious mind will adjust.
I think it will. I think the other thing is, I love just hitting greens, mate. That's really all it comes down to. You know, mm-hmm. I've had years where I've hit literally every green on the golf course, nearly every event. Last year wasn't quite that year, but you know, it's yeah. So greens, hitting greens and fairways, there's no nicer feeling. And I think in the end, ego is invariably the enemy, the weakness. I know there's a book called Ego, the Enemy, but anyway, the point is, it is the enemy. And that's where you're going to find yourself squeezing things. That's where you're going to say stuff like you did earlier, when I was the resistance to it, in the sense of you said, well, I don't want to be on the green in three. And I was like, well, why not be in the green in three? I'd rather be on the green in three and not look for 20 minutes for a golf ball.
Yeah.
I'm a shorter hitter than most, but you know, I make up for it because I keep things moving.
That's fair. So. All right. So I think it's safe to say that when you think about your shots around the green and on the green, they're not much to consider, right? You're just trying to hit a high percentage shot as fast as you can.
Yeah, anything under than, I don't know, 40 yards or something. In the end, my theory is, if I'm going to have a very good chance of winning an event, it's because I've spent enough time in that area. Nothing else matters. You know, I know
that is to say, you spend enough time preparing that you have touch.
Yeah, that's for me, because I can blow anyone off the golf course speed wise. There isn't anyone on the planet who would come anywhere near me, but it's just fact. But the touch is the key. That's in the end the single most important point, because that is the thing that I just never really have enough time for, and I should do more time of it, but. I do have enough time. It's just I need to really motivate my life. I could happily go and spend an hour and a half on a track, put mm-hmm. myself through hell, but then to go and spend an hour and a half around a chipping green just messing around. Now, that's why I loved the World Champs a couple of years back, because it was just Luke and I, and we were just messing around nonstop playing, you know, we were trying to beat each other. It was brilliant. So, of course, by the end of the event, we were both as sharp as anything and playing great. No surprise there. That is the secret. If you want to be any good, hold putts and chip it close. Or even chip it in.
There you go.
I mean, it's nothing you haven't heard before, but yeah. So it's, I don't know. Obviously, I'm downplaying all the other stuff, but I do think for me,
yeah.
If I was just to spend a bit of time on that personally, that becomes at that moment the ultimate speed golfer without any question.
That is an interesting point of view from an advanced speed golfer. From a more intermediate speed golfer, you know, I think a lot about what is the high percentage shot here. That is, you know, how do you take double bogey out of play? And now we're starting to get into what's the secret of a low golf score. The biggest secret of a low golf score is eliminating the big numbers, the sixes, sevens, and eights on the card. And so to your point, one bad shot around the green can lead to a world of hurt. Chipping over the green, chipping to an unsafe location, that can add up in the time and the golf score. And so, yeah, I spend a lot of time thinking about what is the safe shot from here, what will guarantee me a bogey and give me a solid chance at a par.
Yeah, avoid the 3, 4, 5, whatever putts.
Yeah.
So I've certainly had a few of.
Yep. All right, so here's my checklist. How do you avoid double bogeys? Number one, figure out a safe line off the tee that avoids trouble. Keep your golf swing simple so you can ensure quality strikes.
Yeah.
Try to play one preferred shot shape on 90% of shots. Most of us are not good enough to be hitting draws and fades on command. Miss on the smart side of the green, and every green has a different smart side. Hit high probability shots around the green, and then make sure you're hitting your lag putts with the right pace.
Yeah, good. All right, I like the sound of that. All I would say is, again, from personal experience, I never try and get on a par 5 in 2 when I speed golf. Yes, if it's like a stupidly short one, which sometimes you get on our courses, but you know, I don't take that on. I'm always very boring in terms of I just hit the ball down there. Yeah, if there's a massive lake on the right, I will play to the left or fade it in. And when it comes to chipping, I'm just thinking out loud when I'm teaching people as well. You know, a lot of kids will try and play a flop shot. I never play a flop shot, ever. Don't need to. There's never a time, actually, realistically, that you need to play a flop shot. If you're really good at chipping, you can land it just on the edge of the lip and you're so confident, you just bump it over, you know, because you own your game. You own what you do. And if you really can't, then just hit it slightly harder and it goes 10 foot by and you've got still a chance of holding the putt.
Yeah, that's it.
So I agree with everything you just said, by the way.
Cool. Oh, yeah. Two other things on the golf game. Club selection. Do you have the right clubs for this, for your game and this golf course? Some people hit the same clubs every time, an approach I think is great. Really, the only thing I change is what mid iron is in the bag. You know, let's say I'm driver, 7 iron, sand wedge, putter most of the time. Sometimes that switches to an 8 iron, sometimes to a 6 iron, but it's really 3 clubs with 1 adjustable in the middle. Are you playing the right clubs for your game in this golf course? And then mental game, how are you responding to the frustrations that are inherent in golf? And a lot of that is what John Sherman is, my favorite golf teacher. He talks about expectations management. So if you think that every 8 foot putt you should be holing, you're going to end up disappointed 50 to 60% of the time. But if you know that, hey, look, that's a 60% putt for a tour player and a 45% putt for me, then if it grazes by on the lip, you'll understand, hey, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. I like it. I just think, I don't know, I think we could all do with training ourselves to be in the present a bit more. You know.
Love it.
That shot is done. Just watch it. Move on. You know, move on to the next one.
Look, I think of one of my favorite Luke Willett moments. You had a 5-putt on the 18th hole of a tournament here in the U.S.
How fascinating.
And after that, you hit 5 putts, you hit it in the hole, and as you ran to the finish line, you said, well, wasn't that interesting?
Yeah, interesting, exactly, yeah. I don't know. That is just do that. Honestly, it makes such a difference.
Yeah. Right. If your perspective
is done, is done.
If your perspective is I failed, you're going to have a bad time. If your perspective is I learned, then you could have a good time.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. I just my plan is to have fun. You know, if I'm as prepared as I possibly can be, fun will be pretty cool. You know, and if I'm not that prepared, then I'll still have a load of fun. I'll just have a different kind of fun. You know.
Absolutely. Speed golf. Is it too expensive? Speed golf is a working class sport. So what's your point of view on all this, Luke?
Okay, so I heard that to play in the US at the minute, you have a $200 membership fee. Now, which I'd be intrigued to, so I want to know from you what that is. And then the next thing is obviously $350 entry fee. So I talked to my wife about this the other day and I said, so what do you think about this? You know, if we were to set up a little business, you know, create some speed golf events, from what you've seen of speed golf, do you think that's worth, like, is that value for money? And as a complete non-golfer, she said, well, no, I don't think that is. So, but obviously she doesn't, I don't know. I didn't give her the full story. I just said, look, if that was just, if you were to play the British champs and that was what the fee was, she said, no, that wouldn't be worthwhile.
Do you know off the top of your head what will be the fee for the British champs this year?
Oh, I think it won't be too far off what I'm going to say, but it'd be around about £100 to £125. Mm-hmm. It's quite a bit less than what you guys are paying.
It is. It's also a one-day event.
But it's two rounds.
Two rounds, you know, only for the top 20.
Yeah, but you're still playing two rounds of golf, you know, so I think you've got to look at what is it you're intending on doing. Yeah. Yeah, okay, fine. If you look at France would be no different. It's the same price. That is definitely 2 days.
You know. Do you think it'll be €100 for 2 days?
Yeah, I think it's about that. Maybe €150. It's not much.
Yep. Luke, you and I, before the show, we agreed to try something, and we're going to try it right now. This is a game we call Role Play. And so, you know, you have questions about why are the prices so high for speed golf in America? Now, I'm going to put on a mask, and I'm going to be Scott Dolly for a minute. Now, the point here is not to make fun. It's just
been a long time, buddy.
Yay. Luke, yeah. I remember fondly our trip to New Zealand. Now, what do you want to know?
Yeah, exactly. I love that. So what is this membership about, Scott?
Okay, look. Speed Golf USA has one extremely precious asset. That asset is 12 tickets to the Speed Golf World Championships. A lot of people want those tickets, and the only place to get them is from Speed Golf USA. So that's not all you get with a Speed Golf USA membership. You also get a hat and a t-shirt, and you get your name on the rankings board. But the main thing you get is access to the World Championships, and there's only one place you can get it. You look at our comps in other sports. Look at USA Triathlon, USA Track and Field. What do? They charge their members a membership fee, and the only way to get into the elite selective events is by being a member of this organization. Now, because there's no other show in town, we set the prices. And, you know, if you think about this, there are 12 spots to Worlds. That means $2,400 that Speed Golf USA would not have had if not for this membership fee or more.
Okay. And tell me about then the $350 to enter the US Open. I'm going to come back to membership. One more question in a minute, but go on, we'll go with that one.
Okay. Well, you don't have to pay $350 to play in the US Open, Luke. You can pay $250 and have your tickets for the entire weekend, which includes unlimited use of the practice facilities, discounted practice rounds, a deal at the hotel if you want to take the deal at the hotel. So this is an entire weekend event that we are putting on with Speed Golf Temecula, and it's going to be an unforgettable event. By the way, how many US Opens are there in speed golf? There is exactly one. So if you want access to the best event on US soil, you're paying a premium price, and that price is $250. Or if you want to have access to prize money, well, that prize money has to come from somewhere, which is why there's an extra $100 charge, $350. Those extra $100 go into the prize pool for the winner to win.
Okay. And then what about if you only want to play the US Open? Do you still have to play the membership fee?
No, you can. If you only want to play the US Open and you don't care about being selected to the World Championships team, you can pay a $15 one event pass for your US Open ticket.
Okay, all right. So it's starting to make more sense now. And what is the demand for Worlds in US?
I can guarantee there are more than 12 people who want to go.
How many, roughly?
I'd have to look that up for you, Luke.
Scott, honestly, buddy, you should know these things. Okay, so let's just pretend there's 20 people going for 12 spots. Mm-hmm. This is starting to make a bit more sense. But what about, you know, teachers and those people, you know, who are maybe not working in a big high paying banking job or whatever? Is there another way for them to get into the sport? Because obviously last year we had some big numbers in all the events, but actually in the great scheme of things they're still tiny numbers. So how are we going to grow the sport with these high entry costs? But then I've got another question, which is, look at the Open Championship or US Open. Just, I don't know what the numbers are of people who try and qualify for these events, but there's loads of pre-qualifiers. They're everywhere. You know, so there's...
But I'm going to push back on you, Luke. You think those people are getting in for free? No, they have to pay for their USGA registration and handicap index, and then they pay an event registration fee. This is not unusual.
Yeah, but hang on. When I play the Open Championship, I wouldn't say being a PGA professional, which, yes, does have a fee, no question. That also comes with public liability. I also get pretty much, not entirely, just I want to be very clear about this, and there's a certain protocol you have to go through, but ultimately, there's a courtesy-type situation where at my golf club, we look after pros, and vice versa. When I go around the world, people look after me. It's this lovely, you know, kind of club in that sense. So there's a lot of extra little add-ons to my membership that, I mean, the main one is honestly public liability. If someone dies in my hands, at least I'll still have a house. But, you know, so those things help. And then to enter the Open Championship, which of course, if I was to have the most magical experience of my life, I could earn myself, I don't know, like £5-6 million or whatever it is, if I do well.
Well, look, Luke, so, you know, speed golf is not operating at the same scale as those other operations, but I want to make something clear. Because we are collecting $200 per member from willing payers, that gives us more flexibility to sponsor an athlete who may be having financial hardship, but we really want them to attend an event.
I like this. This is good. So what we're doing is by playing, we're giving more people the opportunity to play speed golf.
You said it, Luke.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Thanks, Scott. Okay. I mean, is there anything else you'd like to add, Scott, to this conversation?
Only that you had asked also about how are we going to grow the game if the fees are so high? And my answer to that is there is no fee over and above your greens fee to play casual speed golf. And so the entry point to speed golf, as always, is local organizations, leagues, and meetups. And again, there's no charge or a nominal charge for speed golf leagues and meetups. So that's what we would encourage for people who are just getting into the game. And then for people who want to take the game seriously, this is not unusual in the world of running or triathlon or any comparable hobby. Hobbies are expensive, and let's not forget, Luke, the people who play speed golf may not feel rich, but they're among the 2% of the wealthiest people in the world. So let's not, you know, let's take it a little easy on the social justice here, okay?
I hear you, mate. It's interesting what you're saying there, you know, and when we talked about this before the, you know, recording, and, you know, I brought up park runs over here, and it's just incredible. Like, there is one country on the planet where running is above and beyond booming, and it's in one city especially, and it's London in the United Kingdom. If you truly look at the running clubs, the running culture here, it's unreal. You know, you have a race, if you put a decent 5K race, if you say, I tell you what, here's the deal. You and I say, right, we're going to put a 5K race on, and we've got £1,000 for first prize. Yeah, honestly, you'll get Olympians in it.
Love it.
You'll get people who are going to do 13 minutes for 5K in your race. How crazy is that? I can't, and also the race will sell out in a day, not even. I mean, there was a race recently, a track race, and I think it sold out in 2 minutes.
Wow.
And yet they're running for relatively small sums of money, putting so much effort in. Some of them, the pacers get paid more than the actual guys who win.
That's crazy.
All right. Because it's such an event.
I'll answer one more time as Scott Dolly. Luke, this is a great point you're bringing up, but I will tell you, I actually used to run a running promotions company. And the economics of running races are significantly different than the economics of hosting a speed golf tournament. A running race, you can have effectively unlimited participants. You know, of course, there's a reasonable cap, but you can have effectively unlimited participants who all pay you the same amount. And it's not like you pay more to rent out the course. Meanwhile, for every speed golf event, there's a cap. It's maybe about 60 or 70 golfers. You can't feasibly have more than that. And meanwhile, you're paying the golf course extra for every single player. So the economics of running a speed golf event are just, frankly, different than running a running event. We would love to charge $5 if we could, and it's just not reasonable based on what it costs us to put on the tournament.
Hang on, just one last thing then. I'll throw at you. How about if we had our star-studded events, but we put them on true municipal golf courses where maybe the greens have a little bit of a bobble and the tees are a bit burnt out in places, but yet we have all the hype and all the stuff around it, making it look really, really cool, like a running race, right? So we brought those overheads right down. Now, actually, maybe it's that sort of course where actually they just say, you know what, we want the promotion, we're going to help you, we get this, this is going to be our biggest thing we've had in decades. What about that?
I would have no issue with that. Speed Golf USA is happy to sanction any event that a person wants to organize, and we are proud to partner with courses like Horton Smith Golf Course in Springfield, Missouri, that is a beautiful and modest municipal golf course.
Mate, I think that's I don't know what your municipals are like in the US, but that's actually a very good golf course.
I love Horton Smith. I shot the world record in 2021, in case you've forgotten.
It's so amazing. It's a lovely golf course. It's in great condition. I don't know. I just think you guys are spoiled over there. you guys are soft. You need to toughen up. You need to play real crappy lies where there's mud under your ball and whatever.
Your mouth to God's ears. Oh, dear. All right, and scene.
Yeah.
Luke, exactly. That was fun.
Hey, that was good. That was good. And actually, in the end, it was a very good sales pitch, I think, for speed golf events and playing in them, which is good.
Yeah, trying to keep that even-handed. Like I said, the point wasn't to make fun, but it was to make a reasonable case for why the prices might be what they are.
Yeah. No, I think it's good. I think everything we said there was bang on, mate. And the thing is, I left thinking, actually, no, I fancy entering event. So, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're trying to do. Because I have had someone reach out to me saying about this and saying that they're probably not going to play a Speed Golf USA event this year because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was quite surprised, especially when I saw who the person was.
Yeah, I felt the pinch for sure when I paid my $200 registration or my $200 membership fee and my $250 Speed Golf US Open entry fee on the same day. That was
well. The tricky thing for you guys is most of you have to get a flight there. It's different for the guys who are local, which obviously has a big pool, which is lucky.
Yep.
But you know, over here, a lot of people can just drive to the golf course.
Yep.
You know, and they might even have friends because it's so close. Where they can just stay, it brings the cost down big time, you know. So actually, for probably there's a decent amount of US people, maybe not our event, but the Scandic event, it'd be cheaper for them to go and play in that because hotels are covered, food's covered, entry fees covered.
Yeah, well, and this is Adam speaking now. I think that global competitive pressure is a great thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Other people around are providing more value for less money, puts totally, pressure mate. On us.
Totally. Look at Rob last year, did the same thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, and if it weren't for him doing what he did, he would have never had anyone there. But
that's it.
You know, and which is an interesting one, isn't it? Because he's such a known guy, but you know, there's so much more to it than being an influencer. Let's be quite clear on that.
Yeah. Well, for me at least, Castlebar was very hard to get to, and yeah, without getting some travel support, I certainly wouldn't have been there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it is an interesting one, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people say, oh, well, it's Rob, you know, he's the savior and he's going to make it all work for all of us. But clearly, yes, if he had the right venue, it would be swamped,
mm-hmm.
as in location. Nothing wrong with Castle Bar, it's a great golf course, but hard to get to.
That's it.
Whereas if his one was in Dublin Airport, I suspect it might be very, very different.
I think you may be right.
You know, I mean, Las Vegas could be the one for that event because it ticks all the boxes, right?
Yep, easy to get to.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting. Obviously, let's see if it actually happens, but yeah.
All right, time check. I've got two more things on the agenda, but we can wrap whenever you need to.
How quick are they?
Let's see. Garmin Watch Fleet, very quick.
Yeah.
All right. SpeedScore has purchased a fleet of 18 Pixel 3 watches with LTE that will serve as the equivalent of chip timers for speed golf tournaments. So what's cool about this, Luke, is that the watch will keep score for you. You never have to enter a score on the watch if you don't want to. It will give you a predicted score that you can then go back and reconcile after the round is over. So super lightweight way to audit scoring and make it so that, especially for smaller, lower profile events, scorekeepers are now optional. I am like 1,050% in favor of this development. So proud of Chris for what he did.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. There's no question about it. I think it's really, really good. I've come around to it. I'm just about keeping costs down. That's in the end. So I think you mentioned there might, down the line, there's going to be a fee which is going to be reinvested.
Ooh. Yeah, so pause.
That's a line.
Pause. So the 18 Pixel 3 watches that Chris bought, he paid for those with university funds. He's going to ship them to speed golf tournament organizers, either for $0 or just for the cost of shipping. And he, of course, has already built the app infrastructure on the back end to support collecting all the data. So,
mate, how much would that cost? That's quite an investment.
Well, so this is part of his professorship at Oregon State University. So, yeah, they endowed what I think they call a speed golf.
We need a speed golf event on every week now. We need to make the most of this.
Yep.
Send them over here.
Right. And so if you are a normal speed golf consumer who wants access to this watch app, then the fee is $10 a month for that. You're under no obligation to get it. You don't need the app if you're playing in a tournament because the watch will be provided to you. So this is completely optional. This is just value added to the
only through Garmin.
It's a Garmin app, but then also he's got the Pixel 3 watches. That's not a Garmin product, but I guess the app still works with it. in any case,
I wonder. Okay.
Yeah, in any case, nobody has to pay the $10 a month unless they think the watch app is valuable enough to pay for, which I think is great.
What I think would be really cool would be down the line to have like some virtual kind of league.
Yeah.
Because obviously there is a speed handicap or speed score, whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called. I don't get into the details, but time part, that's the one. And if you could cross that two over, so then that fee nails into that. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Then I think you've opened up something there.
Yeah, Chris absolutely has this on the roadmap, these virtual competitions or virtual head to heads where you play.
It's like a TrackMan, right?
Yeah.
When you play.
You play your golf course,
tournaments,
I play my golf course.
Yeah, it's amazing.
We know your speed golf handicap because we've seen you in competition. We know my speed golf handicap. And so we could have a handicap-adjusted, golf course-adjusted head-to-head competition, you and me.
Right, it's amazing. I think if we could do that.
And I would crush you.
Then you can do whatever you want, mate. The fact is, you know, that really does take it to another level. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Absolutely love that. Because then, you know, we're basically all... We're then in a situation where, you know, a lot of people have said, oh, New Zealand are envious because they all train together, you know, they push each other on. But if you have this tech, we're all pushing each other on. You know, we're all playing the same game. You know, each week we'll see how we're all doing to time par. That's fantastic. You know, so there's no more motivating thing than that.
That's it.
So at that point, $10 a month becomes nothing because
to be a little technical,
that is your park run. I love that.
You don't even need the watch app to do these virtual competitions. I mean, of course it would be honor system if you don't have the app, but you could just type in, like, I had a four on hole number one, you know, all the way through your round, and I finished in 37 minutes. Don't worry, it was definitely 37 minutes. You could type all that in and that would be completely free. Speed score is free. It's just the watch app that's $10.
Okay, cool. Look, it sounds good.
All right,
if we can iron that out, that's great.
Yeah. Last thing on the agenda, got a nice message from Richard in New York. So I put out a newsletter about, provocatively titled, What the Masters is Getting Right and What Speed Golf is Getting Wrong. And if you want to read that, you know where to find This Week in Speed Golf. But what Richard said was, wanted to let you know how much I learned about the Masters from your recent newsletter. Very informative. More importantly, I found your suggestions for how to move the sport of speed golf forward thoughtful and productive. Do you think any of these suggestions will be acted on? And have you, Adam, considered being the one to advance some of the answers to these questions? And so... I took that as a real point of offense. I thought Richard was way out of line in suggesting that I could be a catalyst for change in this sport.
Gosh, it's tricky. I think we both know the volume of effort I noticed in that newsletter you kind of put the point that you burnt out in terms of making content, and
I did.
There's a very high expectation put on your shoulders because you were the guy doing it, but I think everyone forgot it was your hobby and you were just doing it because you enjoyed it. But then it became a had to. You actually had to do it. And it should never be and never have been that, because there is no price that could really pay realistically what that is worth in the amount of time. Because I know from me editing videos and putting stuff out, you know, just a little crappy video that I put out, it would take me an hour or more to edit. It's ridiculous. You know, and if you multiply that I'm talking about an under a minute video.
Yep.
So if you do that for a 10, 20 minute video, whatever it is, and then you multiply that 10, 20 minute video by however many events and however many different things flying in left, right, and center, even if you're using sophisticated software and everything else, oh my gosh. So the point which I'm trying to make here is, I think it was an interesting newsletter you put there. I just think we maybe try and polish things too much. I think the danger would be actually to try and do anything remotely similar to Masters. I didn't watch any of the content, not interested in the event, because it's artificial, it's not real. There isn't a more fake golf course on the planet than that golf course. You know, I want to play. I love golf because of my connection with nature and connection with people, real people, where we play the game we want to play. And it looks ugly sometimes. That's me as well, by the way. And then it looks beautiful other times. That's real, you know. So what I'm saying is, I think our media should be raw. You know, I'm starting to see it come out now. I've seen some lovely videos coming out from Kathy, Carl, you know, started piping up a bit, putting some videos out, where we just literally grab the camera, put it in front of our face and talk into it. Hey, I'm such and such. I'm going out. I'm going to play some speed golf. Then 30 minutes later, right, I played my speed golf round. Look at the difference in the face. It's sweating. There's steam coming off you. I'm bouncing. Or, you know, I've just played an event. Do a quick summary. I don't think you're going to burn out doing that because there's almost zero edit in that. You can just put a little bit of stuff. And if we all, everyone did that, I don't know. I think that'd be a game changer personally. That would be my thing.
Interesting, because I disagree. You know, when I think about what makes the Olympics or even the Disc Golf World Championships great, part of it is the broadcast product, that these athletes have put in so much time and effort to get to raise their games to this level, and then the broadcast product is able to highlight that and show it to the audience in a way that the audience can appreciate how amazing these athletes are. And so I think if there is no broadcast product, then it's difficult to show the athletes the appreciation and show the world what an amazing sport this is. Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted a broadcast product and I made one, was that I thought...
Yeah, but it's unsustainable, mate. You can't, you know, we need to pay for it somehow. We need to get it out there so that someone who has the cash, who has the media acumen and everything else, can actually take it. But if we don't start putting it out there, then they're not going to grab it because you're playing in the dark. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'd rather, because so we all have high net worth or whatever individuals who are somewhere along the lines connected to us, and most of them won't be interested, but there might be one who then takes a look and says, you know what, I'm going to get behind this. And then all of a sudden, because we kind of guerrilla got behind it, made the proof of concept, it then takes off. Mm-hmm. Totally agree with you, mate. Of course we need a platform. We need media and everything else. You know, I put loads of work into this and you know, I love it and I love the thrill of going fast. But right now, you made it quite clear. You were the guy and you burnt out. So mm-hmm. who's going to do it? You know, because otherwise you're just going to have people burning out everywhere, which is pointless.
Yeah, that's fair. I think a broadcast product is important to the visibility of the sport, because it shows ESPN or whoever else, this is what it could look like. And it would look better, of course, if you, ESPN, were involved. But this is what it could look like.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's such a tough one, mate, because, not being funny, this trip is going to cost people more money than they probably ever spent on a trip, ever. So you can't... There are people in the community who might be able to chuck a little bit in, but truthfully... You can't be asking the players for it.
No.
You know, because...
And I wouldn't want to.
There's a few people who are going to be sponsored, but even those, you know, rightfully so, they're being sponsored for good reason, you know, and they deserve that. You know, I, at this point in time, are not, you know, I'm having to pay for it, you know, and that's doesn't sting because I love it, you know, and I'd be there no matter what. But, you know, it's... Yeah. It's... And let's face it, it's probably going to get more expensive the way things are at the minute. You know, even if you paid your tickets, it's still going to go up because it's just sadly the way the world is at the minute. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Also got to be grateful for what we have. I just hope we have a lovely event, which I think I'm sure we will. And they'll put on a great event and everything else. You know, got to be grateful for that. The opportunity to train for it, at least at this point in time.
Amen. All right, Luke, we are surely over time. That's it for Rainbow Unicorns. You can follow Luke on Instagram at LukeWillettGolf. You can find my publication, This Week in Speed Golf, over at speedgolf.baby. Until next time, keep it in the short grass.
Speed Golf Baby, Rainbow Unicorn.